We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Subscribers to NewOrleans.football get all of our news and analysis, so make sure you sign up for the website today, NewOrleans.football/subscribe. Use the code NOF to save 20% on your first payment. We got the walkthrough video up there today, kind of going through some mock drafts and different scenarios about how the Saints should handle their draft. What can they get if they trade back? What would it take to trade up? We explore all that and so much more. And tomorrow we have a breakdown coming of the offensive tackles in the draft after talking to people around the league. How many of them are expected to go in the first round? Which one best fits the Saints and which one best fits the Kubiak offense that's coming here? So we're breaking all that down and so much more. Welcome back to another episode of NewOrleans.football presented by PJ's Coffee. We're coming to you from our studio on Veterans Memorial Boulevard. We got a great show for you guys today. We're going to talk about the three things the Saints need to do to make a deep playoff run and so much more. Nichols State's Brandon Thomas joins us as host. Mike's out on vacation today, so we're gonna see what B can do. We're gonna see if a star is gonna be born today or not. But we'll be right back with him right after this quick break in word from our sponsors. The NewOrleans.football show is proudly presented by PJ's Coffee. PJ's Coffee has some of the best drinks that you can find. They have locations all over the city. They have pastries and everything else you need to get your day started. So go check them out. Are you looking for the perfect engagement ring? Look no further than Friend & Company Fine Jewelers' new engagement salon. This new area houses a wide selection of engagement rings to choose from in all cuts, sizes, and colors. Their experienced staff offer 5-star customer care to help you find the perfect ring to express your love. Visit their new engagement salon today. Friend & Company Fine Jewelers, the perfect ring for the perfect moment and also for the perfect person. 7713 Maple Street between Adams and Burdett Street. 504-866-5433. Friend & Company Fine Jewelers. Check them out at friendandcompany.com. Hard Hide Punch Tool Strawberry Whiskey is an 86 proof blend of aged wheat bourbon, American light whiskey, and fresh Punch Tool strawberries. Blended in New Orleans, it is not for the thin-skinned. Look for it in your favorite stores, bars, and restaurants. New Orleans Stop Football is proud to be sponsored by Firehouse Subs. Make sure you check out their location on Veterans Boulevard. All right, let's get into the show. Welcome back. Let's get into our lead topic presented by Friend & Company Fine Jewelers, the official jewelers of the New Orleans Saints. Friend & Company Fine Jewelers has a great engagement salon, so if you are in the market for a ring, if you're about to ask that special question, make sure you go there and get that special ring for that special someone. They'll get you the best diamonds, the best prices, the best clarity, all that, and so much more. So make sure you go and check them out if you are in the market for an engagement ring. And while you're there, check out their Florida Lead necklace and earring that you see on the screen right now. The earrings are priced at $1,100, and the necklace is $1,350. And as always, we are presented by PJ's Coffee. And if you need a new car, make sure you check out my guy, Matt Bowers. He's got the best cars, the best prices, the best customer care. Check him out. That's my guy. I vouch for him. He will get you the best car at the best car buying experience. So check out one of his many dealerships throughout the region. B. Thomas, the best of everything here, does kind of a little bit of everything for us behind the scenes, sitting in for Mike today. Going to try him out on the mic.
Hey, man.
Doing some scouting on your Nichols State videos of the baseball games. You know, we heard what you got. We brought you up. We're going to see how it goes today, man.
Hey, man, let's see what we got.
All right, let's get to it, man.
All right. All right. Lead topic. What three things have to happen for the Saints to make a deep playoff run?
Yeah, I think a lot of stuff, really. I mean, I think there's a lot of things that they got to do. I don't think they're on the cusp of it by any means at all. I mean, I think, number one, the offense has to be good. And we're going to answer your questions throughout the show. So make sure you're asking them in the chat. We got a bunch of them. We got off Twitter. So we're going to be answering those throughout the show today. This one was brought by T Duke Scoop 51. But yeah, I think the offense has to be really good. I think that's number one. Kubiak has to be who they want him to be. He can't be, you know, a false prophet. Can't be someone that folds under pressure. So he's got to come. He's got to come correct. He's got to make sure he's ready for battle. And when the time comes, he can't back down. So I think that's got to be topic number one for him. Derek Carr, number two, I think kind of flows into that. He's got to be really good. And I think one of the things that he's going to have to do, I think in this offense, you need to be really good between the numbers. Like, that's the main thing. They want to get you good reads between the numbers. He has to be really good in that area of the field, then take the shots down the field. I think he'll be good on the shots down the field. And just kind of that middle quadrant, I think they got to get really good at. And number three for me is, I think there's really four here, but number three for me is they got to find some pass rush. The pass rush has to be good. They got to get their sacks. That's got to be something that's got to step up and be a lot better. And I think the fourth thing, they got to get two offensive tackles, not one, but two. And whoever those guys are, they got to keep Carr upright. What did we miss?
I think, you know, losing experience with May back there in the secondary, you might need to add somebody back there to help Jordan Howden out a little bit. I mean, he had a good run last year, but between him and Tyron is going to try to coach him up, you know, as much as he can during the offseason. But there's just certain things that experience has to teach you. So if you have somebody back there kind of like as a safety blanket, that might be another addition. And then you got to see what happens with Lattimore.
You know,
it's not a done deal that he's going to stay here. So you got to try to see, hey, we need to add another cornerback. Who's going to step up? If Paulson gets hurt, then what happens with this? Not wishing that on anybody, but you just got to be prepared for almost any type of contingency. So,
yeah, I think for sure on that, I agree with the Marshawn thing. And even if Marshawn's there, I think Alante, if he's in the slot this year, I think that he needs to just kind of continue that progression. And I think one of the things with him is it took a little bit of time for him to buy in to that. And I think if he comes into it, bought into it, but the uncertainty with how kind of how things are going on the outside, like, I don't know that it's set up the atmosphere for him to kind of go into it like, all right, this is me. Yeah. So it might be a repeat of last season where he's kind of looking at it like, it's Marshawn coming or going, I'm preparing for this, but I might be on the inside. But right. If he gets on the inside, I think it just kind of has to be that total buy-in. And I think it's important. But I mean, that's definitely, you're definitely on point there. I think safety, you feel okay with what they got, but like when Tyron's down in the box, yeah, having another guy to step up in that role, I think is a huge thing that they need to figure out.
You had a really good point talking about the offensive line and maybe having to get two tackles. And then it kind of relates to your first point about Kubiak coming in with his new system. What do you think they should do at offensive tackle in the draft? I know we've talked about it in the mock draft. I know you and Mike have gone, through it. But who do you think specifically will stand out realistically?
Yeah, it's they need somebody with like good lateral movement. And I mean, there's a handful of guys that I think fit that better than others. And like my guy for me, you know, you aren't going to get Joe Alt. And I think what you start to do is you look at the three cone time a little bit. That's something then the 10-yard split a little bit. It kind of gives you a little bit of a read on that stuff. The story tomorrow, like I went through and I broke it down with the guys. Only one of them has really played a lot of outside zone in college, and that's Fontenot, or however you say it. Fontenot. So he had over 170 snaps of outside zone that he blocked on. Everybody else was under 75 snaps. Most of them were under 50. So it's kind of doing a projection on everybody out. But I think when you watch him, like I think Fontenot has the most upside. I think he's the guy that I like the most for him. Out of all those guys, because obviously you're not going to get all, he's probably going to go at like seven, but I think there's three of them. And I think it's him, Fontenot, and then Latham, I think are the three guys that you kind of look at and you're like, these are the best fits probably out of them. And then I think there's a drop after that. So I think you got to get one of them. And I think, you know, we're going to get to it on another question. I think there's a couple guys on the market that fit as well. So I think, yeah, I mean, I think you have to get one at 14 though. Like I've been trying to talk myself into like, maybe they can draft someone else at 14 and then hit it at 45. Mm. I think you have to get somebody at 14. I don't think they have the flexibility to do anything else.
Well, yeah, you broke it down in the walkthrough today. If y'all haven't, check out the walkthrough. It's a good video that Nick makes exclusively for the website, so make sure you subscribe. But not to really linger on this first topic too long, but I feel like, yes, with Kendre Miller coming back, AK being healthy, and then you got to try to get Jamal Williams going, you do need to get somebody who has good lateral movement.
Oh, no doubt about it. No doubt about it. Yeah.
Yeah. Going on to the next question. It's time for our money question today, presented by Jefferson Financial Federal Credit Union. Could we see the Saints drafting a wide receiver at 45, and who would be that best pick? It's coming from Tommy Tsunami 17.
Tommy Tsunami. So, yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I think there's a handful of guys here, and I think this is a spot where you wait. Like, if you're trying to value 14 and 45 and you want a receiver and you want an OT, I think that you're better off waiting until the second round to get the wide receiver. And I don't know if he's going to make it there, but I think the guy that I would love to get at 45, and I think the value would be tremendous there, but I don't know if he gets past the Bills. I would go Keon Coleman probably if he can get there to 45. I kind of did like a poll around the league. I think that's kind of the spot where he's probably, you know, I think second round is the right value for him. Mitchell from Texas, he's 6'2". I think he's kind of someone that's, you know, big bodied, has some play to him that can be good there. And then Xavier Legette, I think, is another one. I think there's a decent chance that one of these three guys is going to be there. And I think that if you can grab one of them, I think that it's a big win. Like, if you could get one of the top three tackles that we were talking about, top four tackles we were talking about, one of these guys at 45, I would feel good about their draft coming out of the first two rounds, even going into the drought then that sets in after that, and they're not picking again until the fifth.
Well, let's put you on the spot. Who out of those, you gave good reasons for all of them, but who particularly would you want to see on this roster currently constructed who would make the biggest impact?
I kind of like Keon Coleman out of the mix because I think he gives you something completely different from everybody else, you know, on that list, on the roster. I think he gives you that big body catch. I think he gives you the catch radius. I think he's going to give you, you know, he's going to be open when he's not open. And I don't think that he necessarily fits prototype for them. The speed, I think the 4.6 is definitely not within prototype. And then, you know, Mike Thomas didn't fit it either. But one thing they've added, and I've heard they added in the last couple of years of their prototype, is they've added the big receiver prototype. And that's someone that they feel has just kind of that special ability. Like, you know, Keyshawn Johnson would be somebody that fit it, that didn't have the speed, that's kind of like that big bodied, can throw him open type of guy that's going to be able to go up and get it. I think that's Keon Coleman. He has a great basketball background. Played for my guy, Randy Livingston, for Live On. So he was there before he went to Florida, before he went to Michigan State and then Florida State. So, I mean, I like the local ties. But, you know, that really has nothing to do with it. I like the way he plays. I think he's that go up and get it type guy. And I just don't think they have it. And I think with Rashid and Alave, you have plenty of everything else. So what are you missing? I think he kind of has some of what you're missing. But I think someone like Brian Thomas has some of that too. And right. So I think there's multiple ways to get there. But out of these guys, I think I like Keon the most out of them.
I agree. That's who I was going to go with. Of course, you know, you want to be able to give Brian Thomas a chance, but I don't think he's going to last that long. But Keon, yeah, like you said, we already have the speed, but he's so physical that he's able to go up there, get the ball. I mean, A.T. Perry, he's going to do his thing too. But, yeah, I think adding Keon Coleman would actually be a very good move for the Saints.
Yeah, I agree. I like him.
Yeah. Going on to our next question from Who That D. Do you think it's possible to sign Justin Simmons or any other safety besides the draft?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think they're going to push for to push the sign of safety. I think it's a position they've kind of devalued a little bit. And I don't think that they're going to go out and make a splash like that. It is interesting to me that Simmons is still out there. That tells me he doesn't have the market that he wanted. He thought he was going to go out there and kind of hit it and get paid. It's not happening yet. And that market just kind of fell off for them too. So that makes it tough, but I don't think the Saints are going to be the team that goes out and spend the money. I think they've told us already that they kind of view it like as a devalued position, almost like how running backs were. Even a few years ago, the safety market just kind of fell off a little bit. And I just think they feel like they can get more bang for their buck at a different position. So I could see another safety. I just don't see it being Justin Simmons, top of the market type pay.
So how do you think Snead's contract kind of affected him not getting the play that he wanted?
I mean, I don't think the market's there. I think it's been brutal for them overall. Like, to say, I think it's just something, if you look at it and you look at how the league was constructed last year, like, the guys that were getting paid a ton, like, look, they had Justin Simmons and still gave up 70-some points in a game. Like, right. There's just a level of return on that position. And I think just kind of the way the league has changed a little bit, too, is just kind of devalued it a little bit. I think it's probably maybe a little too far. I think this offseason was a little bit crazy kind of how it went. But I just don't think the Saints are going to be the team that goes out and does it, because they aren't a player away. Like, if you're a player away, maybe, but they've kind of shown us over the last few years since Marcus Williams that, like, they don't want to put too much into one guy, and I think it's just kind of going down more and more. And then you start looking at, like, you, if you use, like, PFF grades, and that's not the greatest measure in the world, but if you use those and correlate them to the top paid guys in the league, you start looking, and it's like, okay, there's a few of them that are paid well, and then it's like fifth round pick on rookie contract, fourth round pick on rookie contract, third round pick, a guy that's playing on an affordable contract. And it's just kind of like, well, if these guys are all over and they are being paid a ton and you can kind of get them, all right, like, so why would you pay them? And I think it's the same thing when you look at running backs. It's, you want to draft them, you get them, and then you feel like you can draft another one in the third round and be cool. And I think that's kind of what's happening at safety.
Okay. Let's hit the chat. Let's see what y'all got going on in here. Throwing at you right quick from Jason Champagne. With the newly signed competition at linebacker, could we see the Saints look to trade Pete Werner?
Mike had brought this up too, and I haven't heard this anywhere. And I don't know what his value would even be on the market, but if you're trying to get a pick back and something comes in the draft and now you're stocked at linebacker and someone needs a linebacker and you want to reallocate your resources somewhere else, I don't think it's out of the question. I mean, when Mike said it the other day, I was like, whoa. And then, like, I've been thinking about it for a couple of days. And I think it's possible. I haven't heard anything about it. I haven't heard a desire to get rid of him. I know they want to bring in competition for him, but they have signed two. I don't think the second signing necessarily pushes anyone out the door. But if you feel good about your depth, then I mean, I think it's certainly possible, because look, they need to get more picks. And I don't know if you're getting the second back for Pete, but if you get like a third, like, I don't know. I think maybe you consider it a little bit. Linebacker play across the league is really poor. I mean, I think it's one of the, I think it might be one of the worst positions in the NFL. Like, I don't think a lot of teams feel great about their linebackers. I think the Saints probably feel good about their situation right now. Mm-hmm. But if you feel like Willie Gay can start and you got a decent backup, I think it's definitely at least possible. I don't think it's something they're looking to do, but if someone calls and you suddenly have all kinds of linebacker depth, your phone might ring. So sometimes those things become self-fulfilling, even though you aren't looking for them. So I think it's definitely, I wouldn't be surprised by it, is kind of how I put it. Like, their moves kind of say, like, all right, like, sure, maybe. Like, so I could definitely see it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Going back to our original plan, guys, keep on dropping your questions in the chat. We're going to keep on checking them and interact with y'all throughout this episode. Positions the Saints definitely do not need to draft in round 1, 2, 3, based on your opinion. That's from one Herb Bummer.
Yeah. So the only one I feel like is an absolute no is probably center. I don't think that there's, that's the one spot where I'm like, they're good. I don't think there's really anywhere else that, like, you're looking at it and you're like, I'm not taking this guy. Like, I'm not taking a guy at this position. They could draft a DT. They could draft a DN. They could draft linebackers. They could draft cornerbacks. They could draft safeties. They need two offensive tackles. They could take a left guard for sure. They need a tight end. They could take a wide receiver. Quarterback is something that they could definitely add to. Running back is definitely something they could add to. I guess fullback's probably kind of set right now. I'm kind of excited about Horvath, to be honest. I'm excited to see kind of how he integrates just with his pass catching ability. So I guess I go down to, like, the most unlikely and then positional value. So we got center is the one that's not going to happen for sure. I don't think they take a linebacker just because I don't think the positional value is there. I think this draft is poor at that position. I don't really see one getting selected until probably the second round. So we can just kind of take that out of the equation here. Let me look at I got my little cheat sheet here where I got my own rankings of the guys. Yeah, I think Peyton Wilson's probably late second, and then Junior Colson probably goes after that. So I don't think there's anybody in the first round. So let's take linebacker out of there for sure. And then I just don't see the value being there for quarterback. I think the ones that are worthy of going to 14 are going to go top five. And I don't think they're going to, like, force a pick for Penix or something like that. Yeah. So I don't think quarterback, I wouldn't say definitely not drafting a quarterback, but I would say definitely not a center or a linebacker. And then, you know, after that, I think the door's wide open for anything.
Yeah, totally agree with you on those points, man. Oh, we have a super chat from Matt. Is Sal DeVary staying at guard, or will there be an upgrade like Christian Mahogany in the cards with Sal DeVary playing tackle?
I don't think Sal DeVary is going to move to tackle. He does have some position flex that I haven't really thought about, but I think he's probably a guard in this offense. So Yeah, I think he probably stays a guard. I think that's probably where they want him. I think he's probably going to be the left guard next year. I think they want him to be the left guard next year. Hurst came back on a league minimum deal. He's a plug-and-play guy there if you have to. I don't think James Hurst really is ideally what you want in the scheme. Like, going back to the first question, like, the lateral movement and everything, I think, is so important. And I thought that was a huge hindrance for them when he was playing tackle. I think it's a hindrance for him with him at guard. So, and I think some of the issues they had in the run game, you know, I think some of that stuff showed up last year because they did run a lot of wide zone, just not as much as San Fran or we expect Kubiak to. So I think Saldivari fits that scheme really well, like on paper, his traits, all that stuff. He's obviously got to go out and do it, but I think you're best with him at guard. And if you can get another tackle, you know, I think it fits really well. One of the things I like about Latham is he's 342 pounds, but he moves, you know, he's built like a guard, but he moves like a tackle. So I like that about him quite a bit. But yeah, I don't think I see Saldivari going to the outside, but like if you're in dire straits, like I think anything's on the table, but I think they really strongly believe in him at guard.
Yeah. I don't know if we've seen enough of him to even see him going outside at tackle, but I feel like at guard with the running backs we have, he'll probably stick at that position just to, you know, open up some holes and stuff like that. But, you know, I got another question for you. This is off script, completely off script.
I'm ready.
Okay, so you talked earlier about lateral movement. You talked earlier about who you would select at tackle. How do you think the Saints will more or less embrace somebody if they come from a smaller school, but they turn out being well?
I don't think, like, so... Are you asking, like, are they, like, snake-bitten by previous experiences? Like, because of Trevor Penning, because of Peyton Turner, because of, you know, Saldivari was Old Dominion.
Keep on going down the list, because that's exactly what I'm asking.
I don't think so. I mean, I think you have to trust your scouting, and I think you trust your coaching. And, you know, I don't think it you know, like, Teron Armstead was a small school guy, and it's just kind of like, just because you hit there, you can't expect everyone to hit after. Just, like, you can't expect negative to lead the more negative. You know, I do think that there's a... I think everybody kind of desires, you know, the SEC player, the Big Ten player, you know, if they go to the right Big Ten schools. Like, I think the big programs, proven success, they're forged in fire, like you see it. But if you see a gem at a place, I don't think you can be scared of it. My thing with them is I just don't want to see them take someone where it's like, well, he needs to develop. Like, if you're drafting a tackle, you have two holes of tackle, and you're kind of looking at him like, well, he could be really good in 2 years. That isn't what they need right now. They need someone that can come in and play right away.
Yeah.
You know, and I guess where I start to feel like snake bitten is with that. Like, because even then, like, you shouldn't just be drafting for this year. You aren't in the Super Bowl window. So if you draft someone and it takes them a year to kind of really be great, like, who cares? You're on a longer term runway anyhow. But we just haven't seen that development happen with, like, the last four or five guys where you're like, they took him with a high pick, but he needs to season a little bit. And then it comes out and it's just boiled chicken. And that isn't kind of what you want anymore. Like, you need to, you know, if I'm ordering it, like, I want hot and spicy, like, right out the gate. Yeah. Like, yeah. So yeah. I don't want to have to wait to get that flavor on, you know. So it's something that I think that they need to just, I don't know, maybe the new coaching staff on offense helps with that, but we've seen it on defense too. So I just don't want to see, it can be small school, but like small school ready, not small school, you know. Got to get ready. Yeah.
Got you. All right. We're going to hit a quick break. After that, we'll come back with more questions. Stick around.
Are you tired of renting and ready to own your dream home? Contact Jefferson Financial Federal Credit Union, your trusted source for home loans. Our competitive rates and flexible terms can help make your home ownership dreams a reality. If you're a first-time home buyer or looking to refinance, our experienced lenders are here to help. Our online application process allows you to apply on your schedule. It's quick, easy, and convenient. Visit us online at jeffersonfinancial.org to learn more. Federally insured by NCUA, Equal Housing Lender.
Martin Wine and Spirits is home to a selection of hand-picked barrel select bourbon, whiskeys, and much, much more. They are family-owned and operated since 1946 and specialize in wine, spirits, gourmet food, gift baskets, catering, and tasting events. They have many locations, so they're never too far away. You can check them out in Metairie, New Orleans, Mandeville, and Baton Rouge, or if it's more convenient, you can always shop online. Whether you're a wine novice or a seasoned collector, you'll enjoy the Martin Wine and Spirit experience.
Appreciate y'all for sticking around. We're going to go with our next question. Over under on high blood pressure games next year.
Yeah, and this one is brought to you by Hard Hide Punch a 12 Strawberry Whiskey. That is not for the thin-skinned. I would say probably a good amount. I think there's a good amount of games. Look, the only games that I think are going to kind of be like blowout game, like bad side blowouts, I don't know that I'm looking at it and saying the Saints are going to blow anyone out. I think that they lose to the Chiefs probably for sure. I don't like how they match up against the Eagles until we see them stop Hurts, like specifically Hurts. Like they made Jalen Hurts look great before Jalen Hurts made himself look great.
Yeah.
So he was killing them like, you know, back then when it was like, man, they're getting cooked by Jalen Hurts. Like, yeah. And then it's like, oh, wait, Jalen Hurts is like actually really good. But at that time, he was still kind of figuring things out. So, yeah, I think they got to, I think those two games are going to be tough for him. I think the highest blood pressure game is probably going to be Denver. Like, you don't want to lose to Sean Payton. And I think people are going to kind of be feeling it that week. And even the fans that like kind of hate the Saints right now, I think even coming in that once that game starts, like, they aren't going to want, you don't want a guy coming back and kicking you in the teeth. Like, he left you. Like, when you see, like, you break up with someone and you see him 2 years later, like, you want to be like, ooh, they aren't doing well. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you don't want them to come back. Like,
yeah,
man, she's been working out. Like, she lost weight, she dyed her hair. Like, oh, no, you don't want none of that. So you want to make sure when someone breaks up with you, like, that you win the breakup, they lose the breakup. Like, so I think that one's going to be high stress. But I think the whole schedule is you know, probably going to be high blood pressure games. But I think that's, like, I don't think you assume the Saints are going to be a juggernaut. So, like, if they're playing a lot of high blood pressure games, like, it's going to probably be terrible on Sundays, but that at least means that they're competitive and they're probably, you know, sticking around 500. And if a couple things break right, maybe you're in the playoffs. So I think that that's just going to kind of be where they are. I think they're just stuck in that mid, but I think a lot of the league is stuck in that mid.
Yeah, I totally agree with the different games that you really don't know where they're at yet. So you can't gauge, like, am I really going to care at this point or not? But the one thing that I have to say is, you don't know what the division is going to look like this year.
Yeah.
Atlanta has a new coach, new quarterback. Panthers, they might be, you know, they might turn it around. Tampa Bay, yeah, you might be able to gauge it because you've seen Baker for a year, but you really have no idea. But you had an interesting point with the Broncos game. Let's say, hypothetically, the Saints are 9-2. And let's say the Saints are 9-2 and it's Sean Payton week. Not even Broncos week. It's Sean Payton week. Where do you think the barometer in the Super Bowl is? Who in the Superdome is? Who do you think is cheering more?
Oh, I think they're on the Saints side for sure. Like, I think it's definitely a pro Saints crowd at that point. I don't think, you know, I think there's a lot of love for Sean, but I think when Sean comes back, he's a villain. Like, for that day at least. And I think Sean's viewed that way in some quarter, but I think, you know, still generally he has a positive review here. But if the Saints are 9-2, like, oh man, at that point, like, it doesn't matter who it is. Like, just they want, you know, kill everybody. I think the odds of it, like, turning against DA, or if they're 2-9, then I think they're cheering for Sean. And it's more cheering against the Saints at that point and cheering against DA at that point. So, yeah, for sure. Look, one thing though, like, I was looking at the schedule earlier. Like, I think the Chargers game was a game where I was looking at, I was like, man, that one's going to be tough. Like, they've torn it down. So I think that one's maybe a little bit gettable for sure. They got rid of all their receivers and everything. So, and they let some pieces go. So that I think they're kind of like in a reload, sort of like the Saints. So I think the power of that one changes a little bit. I don't know, looking at it overall, like, when I first looked at the list of opponents, like, they felt daunting. And then I saw a stat, like, it's like they have one of the weaker schedules. And I was like, no, they don't. And then you look at it and you're like, it's manageable. Like, there's a couple really tough games, but, like, it's manageable overall. So I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. All right, let's kick it to our Martin's question of the day. Martin's is home to a wide selection of hand-picked barrels, like bourbon, whiskeys, and more. Martin's, so much more than just wine. At Trey Wavy 30, any more O-line free agents that we're looking at? The Saints.
Yeah. I don't have anything concrete yet, but I think there's four that probably makes sense. DJ Humphreys, Becton, Donovan Smith, Andrus Peat, they're still all out there. I think they have to go get one of these guys. And I think they need to have one on ice. I would be shocked, and I said this before, I would be absolutely shocked if they don't have one guy just on the tuck somewhere. Like, hey, draft's over, we're gonna come call you, you know, assuming things play out the right way. Like, I don't think you have, like, the agreement in place. I would not be allowed, even though, you know, sometimes there's a understanding, a framework, and then something pushes it over the finish line at that point. And, you know, I would be supremely surprised. I don't think you can go into this draft saying we got to get two of them. Like, I don't think that's what the Saints are going to do. I think that'd be crazy. And it's just too much to try to force. because you get to that second round and then like, you know, there's just guys that you could end up drafting that I think just don't really fit well with, you know, kind of what they would want to do and how they'd want to build it. Like Patrick Paul is probably the guy that in the second round, if you're sitting there, I think he's a little bit too just, you know, power-ish. He's not agile, side to side, lateral movement, all that stuff. I just don't think he fits the scheme great. I don't think Mims, you know, I was kind of looking at the Sam Fran prototypes, like just to see, like Mims isn't the type of guy that they would have drafted. So I'm just kind of assuming that the Saints are going to look at it the same way. So, I mean, there's just a handful of guys that I think aren't great fits that you get in the second. And I think you're just trying to force too much. So I think they have to have one of them on the tuck.
So let's say the Saints bring back Pete. Let's say Trevor Penny ends up being good. How do you approach kind of people that you've had in the tuck saying you're going to bring them in? How do you approach somebody you might draft?
Well, you wouldn't know they're good yet. So you don't know that Penning, what Penning's going to be, you know? So you got to make your decisions now. And I think if that becomes the case, like if you sign on one of these older guys, it's a one-year deal. You aren't committed to them. It's you know, you could say, you know, buy Andrus, like if you have to, like it's, you aren't committed to him. You want to be committed to Pete. So it's almost like the 17 where Alvin came and, you know, at that point, like, you know, Sean Singh was like, well, free agency happens before the draft. I guess in this case, it's reversed. But, like, it's the same thing, though. Like, you don't know about Trevor Penning right now. So free agency's happening before OTAs, training camp, preseason. You know, so you can't bet on Penning. You can't bet on Ramchek's health. Like, you can only go off the information you have right now. So you bring him in, and then if they don't fit, like, okay, you got to vet his depth. And if he takes that the wrong way, you let him go. And you're happy to do it because that means Trevor Penning's good. Like, if Trevor Penning's good, all your problems are solved. Like it's that would be the greatest thing that could happen. If Trevor Penning's good and you draft another offensive tackle and he's mediocre to good, serviceable at least, all of a sudden your offensive line might be a strength. Like it could be, you know, it could come together really quick in a way, you know, Saldivari hits. Like, so that's a lot of ifs, but like if you have those ifs hit and you got one of these guys and now, you know, Becton becomes expendable, you know, sorry, like it's tough, but yeah. That's just going to kind of have to be how it would have to play out.
Got you. Hey, guys, don't forget, continue to drop your questions in the chat. We'll be looking in there. Our next question comes from JBrax29. How realistic is it the possibility of Saldivari? We already kind of answered this a little bit. Saldivari being the starting left guard in 2024.
I think it's extremely, extremely possible. I mean, the door is wide open for him. I think that the deck's stacked where they want him to win that job. Like, you would much rather have Nick Saldivari be starting at left guard than James Harris. Cause I mean, it just means a lot of things, you know, you got the younger player there, you got a long-term starter there. If he wins it, at least an option to be a long-term starter, you've upgraded the position, your barrier that's kind of in place for him to have to overcome. Like you've overcome it. And now you've raised the bar on your offensive line a little bit. You know, as I said before, I think he's a better scheme fit for what they're doing than Harris. So you don't have the athletic liability there. So for a million different reasons, I think they want that to happen, and I think it becomes like extremely realistic that he could be the starter. I think it's kind of, you know, I think they're waiting for him to take that.
Yeah, like you said earlier, not enough on tape yet, but it would help if a guy that you got last year would come up and make some moves and, you know, kind of command himself being a starter.
I think he could do it too. I think he's an incredibly smart person. I think that was the thing that stood out the most about him last year. After they drafted him, talking to him, and then just talking to him throughout the season is just like picking stuff up and just kind of how he sees it and how he views it. And he looks at the, you know, I think it's really interesting. Like there's a lot of guys that kind of look at it, you know, kind of through their prism of like, this is what I do as the right guard. This is my job. And this is what I'm doing. Like Saldivari studies it as a whole and kind of just knows how all the pieces fit together. And I think that could work really well with some of the stuff they're doing in this offense, like with the polling and just kind of how all the pieces come together. Just kind of seeing it more as a holistic view, I think is something that, you know, just as they learn a new system, I like his odds there. And I like his ability to potentially come in and take that job from Hurst.
All right. In your opinion, next one from Saints Tube, in your opinion, what's the logic behind bringing back Dennis Allen? Do you think the organization actually believes in Dennis Allen, or do you think that they're just too stubborn to fire him? If you're a longtime listener, you might know the answer to this question.
I think they actually believe in him. And again, this isn't going to win us any points here, but I think just if you take out the emotion and all that stuff and just kind of the style points and everything, and you look at it and you say they were 7-10 and then they improved to 9 wins, That's a 2-win improvement. I mean, so I don't know that you can sit there and say, you know, this guy, if you're looking at it and you're kind of looking at it from, you know, a perch. And look, fairness isn't something that anybody wants to hear about in sports. And if you have the chance to get better, you should always try to get better or whatever. Like, I agree with all that stuff. But, like, I don't see a falling backwards last season. I see them getting the 9 wins. And the way they got the 9 wins was the most painful way in the world. There was a point, you know, I was looking at it like, they can't. This isn't, it's done. Like, I thought it was done. And then they go and win 4 of the last 5, and it changes the narrative. So, I mean, I was right there at a certain point, but the information has changed to the point where it's like, you just kind of got to, all right, like, see what happens this year. But I don't think it was at a point where me sitting in this chair, I could have said, they need to fire this guy. I think that he did what he needed to do. He got his offense to change. They won 4 of the last 5. It just kind of is what it is. I think they got to roll forward with it. I don't think it's them being too stubborn. I think it just, honestly, he won 9 games after winning 7. Like, that's going up. And then when he took over the job, they were a 7-win team. And I don't want to be making excuses for the man, but, like, winning 7 games, if you said, you know, Andy Dalton's going to start most of your season, I don't think I would have expected very much, you know? I don't think they had a lot at quarterback that year. Won 9 games. I mean, I think it's fine, but I think he has to do better this season for sure.
If, going back to 2022, if Jameis comes back, let's say Pittsburgh. Let's say Jameis comes back to Pittsburgh. He's fully healthy. Do they win more games?
I mean, I think the league's told you what he is at this point. And he, you know, he hasn't gotten – nobody was beating down their door to make him a starter. So I think it's just kind of – I think just kind of where they were at and what they had and you know, the lack of everything. You know, there wasn't a ton of firepower. Like, Olave's young. I just don't think they had a ton of everything at that point. Mike Thomas is hurt. Yeah. I think Jameis, like, with a fully loaded deck – could have easily, you know, if you give him a stacked offense and there's a lot of stuff to feed off of, sure. But I don't think that you put him on a team where you got to carry it. I just don't think that's it. I think he's somebody, I think in Cleveland, if Deshaun goes down, I would not be surprised at all to see him have success, because that's a team that's kind of built for him to be a piece of it. And it's kind of what they're trying to do with Carr now. Like, I think Jameis could have more success with this roster than he did in 22.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think the year where he started, was it 20? 21. 21. I don't think they were set up greatly then, and they were finding a way, but it was with much better coaching too, though. So I think if you just give him everything, there's a chance he could drive a car, but I don't know that you want him to be the guy that builds out the car and drives it. So I just kind of think that's where it was at then. And like I said, I just think the league has kind of told you how he's kind of viewed. And then at that point, that guy isn't lifting you to 10, 11, 12 wins on his own.
Okay. Sticking with that same vein with DA, Lopez J125 asks, how would the perception of DA change if he wins 2 more games than last year?
Completely. I mean, I think it's dramatically different. Okay. He's an 11-win coach at that point against, you know, a decent decent set of opponents. You got the Chiefs in there. Like, to get to 11, you're probably beating a couple good teams. If you're winning 11 games in the NFC, like, you're a legitimate contender at that point. There's just not a lot of good teams over here, this side of San Francisco. So if he wins 11 games, I think it changes. I think the whole entire conversation changes, especially because you're kind of going into it with low expectations, and 11 wins is legit. So that would mean, you know, he made the right hire at OC. I think then a lot of narrative starts changing. Like, I think people start looking at it like, wait a minute, this guy's, like, actually been able to recruit really well. And, like, he has. They've went out and gotten free agents that they've wanted. They've went out and got the coaches that they've wanted. And if you're recruiting well and you're winning games, and I think it just takes a lot of the hard edge off of everything. And you're able to kind of sit back and kind of see it then at that point. So, yeah, I think at that point, nobody's talking about him losing his job, being a failure, like, anything like that. So I think it would be a dramatic perception shift.
Okay. Going back to the chat, we're wrapping up the show, guys. Bryson asks, what QB in this year's draft is our best fit to take over after Derek Carr's contract is up?
Caleb Williams? Like, any of them?
No, for sure.
Like, you know, any of them, but none of them at the same time. Like, it's so hard to say, like, is it Penix? Like, I would like to see if the Saints could get him in the building and see what he could do, that'd be great. Bo Nix, if you could get him in the building and see what he could do, that'd be great. Mm. Have I seen enough out of them to say this is a successor? No, like, that's impossible. I, you know, even the guys in the top 3, like, the only one that I would feel comfortable, Like, I think Caleb's the only one that you know for sure that
guaranteed.
Yeah. And it's that's not even guaranteed. Like, you know, he's not Joe Burrow, but you know, I think there's questions about even him. So yeah, I think there's questions about Drake May. I think there's some questions about Jaden. You know, I think there's questions about everybody, and then they become more pronounced as you go down the list. So there's nobody that I would say, like, for sure, like, this is the guy, this is the style, this is what you want, you know. And we haven't even seen this offense. We've seen what we think it's going to be. We don't know exactly what it's going to be either. So it's tough to say, but yeah, I would hate to be a team that has to draft a quarterback. It's just such a hard gamble. I wouldn't feel good about any of them. You know, I don't know what Washington's even going to do it too. I think it could go either which way. And I would be really surprised to see Jaden go there, honestly, just kind of on how it sounds. So I wouldn't want to have to do it. I think it's the hardest thing to have to do. And if you're drafting a QB, you're probably in bad shape, or you're just taking over and you're trying to get your footing. So it's just usually, it's not a good place to be. And most people are wrong. So I have no idea out of this group who would be the best. Like, I don't know if they're built to block for a running quarterback at this point. So yeah, it's tough.
Yeah. Appreciate you guys for tapping in today. You know, we're doing our thing over here at NOF. Make sure you become a member and subscribe to NewOrleans.football for more exclusive Saints news, analysis, and podcasts. Catch you next time.